It's 8:17. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Board of Education yesterday voted 3-2 in favor of option 3A for the high school expansion. This would leave Dozier Field where it's at. Now the school board needs to decide how much to ask voters to approve for a bond election in November. In the studio with details, I have school board member Phil Kaplan along with business administrator Todd Halbert. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Phil, you voted in favor of option 3A, again, as I mentioned, leaving Dozier Field where it is. This was the expansion committee's recommendation as well. But what 3A does is limits the size of the expansion and would likely be more disruptive to students during construction. So how come you voted in favor of that option?
You know, there were pros and cons in each option, and each option I felt was equally academically viable. Now, the committee did come with a 2-1 recommendation in favor of 3A, so that was one factor for me. And also being the in-town school board member, I can tell you the in-town sentiment is heavily running towards 3A. So when you balance student needs, neutral, in-town sentiment, pro-3A, committee recommendation 3A, it was pretty clear to me.
Right. And again, the recommendation from the committee was because it doesn't move Dozier Field. I mean, what were some of their findings that this was the better option?
Again, it meets the academic needs. It has all the facilities that we need in terms of art and athletics for PE classes. Our feeling is that building the school further than this next expansion is not advised academically. So this will get our school to 2,000 capacity. We do not anticipate another addition to this high school. This will be it for this high school. And then, you know, we move on to looking at other options for if there's future growth beyond that.
All right. So the price tag, though, for the both options was about the same, right? And
correct.
And the student capacity.
Correct. About 68 million and about 2,000 kids, and just you had different facilities in different places. We have a very interesting CTE space that we're building, and I can tell you the programs that we put in for the business program, we've literally doubled going into next year the enrollment for that program.
And option 4A would have given the district more room for expansion if, in fact, that's what they needed to do, as opposed to looking at a new site for a high school.
It's just not academically advised to have a school larger than 2,000, so that just was not a consideration. Our feeling is if we go beyond 2,000, other than on a very temporary basis, we do not want to do it in that same facility.
All right.
Park City High stays Park City High, and it stays in the same place, and we build 3A.
The school board also unanimously finalized the three elements of the bond. That means that we move ninth grade into the high school and expand the school. We need to build a new 5-6 elementary school, and we need money to purchase land for future school site needs. So how much does all of that add up to?
I can give some very round range numbers. The high school, you know, since we're far into a mature community process, that price tag will be right about $68 million. As far as the 5-6 school, we are, you know, last night we completed a committee charter for our 5-6 process, which will be kicking off, and we tried to cap it in the $25 million range, but that's not a hard number yet. So a lot depends on the site and the site preparation and what ultimately features will come up through a similarly organic process to what we did for the high school, where there's a design team that does not include board members. It's really a community. You know, the high school is what the community wanted. And now we want to design a 5-6 school, which reflects what the community wants. As far as land goes, I'll just say that what we would like to find is land suitable for building a high school, which puts it in the 50-acre type range or larger. And we do have some other plots of land in our inventory, which would be suitable for elementary size schools. So, you know, that price tag, we haven't discussed publicly what that might be cost. So we are kicking off the process of looking either by ourselves or in conjunction with an adjacent district, South Summit.
All right. So we're up to $93 million. That's without land for a new high school.
So yeah, between the two schools. Yeah.
Right. So the bond would be at least $95 million. Is that?
Yeah, something in that range could go north of 100 if we start pulling land into the conversation.
Yeah. Do we need the other land, the other parcels? Like you mentioned, we have, what, Bear Hollow and I think something in Silver Creek. Can we just sell that and then use that money to purchase property?
We're looking at all options at this point. I mean, this is definitely in the exploratory phase for land. And I think it's one thing that's important for the public to know is that when we do go to bond, it's giving the district a 10-year bonding authority. So we don't need to identify the specific piece of land before the election. We might, but you know, we need to find what's available when it's available and then do it within our financial constraints that we put in place before that, by August.
Yeah. So 10-year bonding, how come usually we talk about 15, 20-year?
So the history of the school districts is between 7 and 15 years. And we were looking at 20-year bonding. That seems to be the trend right now as other school districts are going to market here in Utah with bond offerings. And so we were just following that pattern just to see what the pricing is. Are those favorable interest rates at those ranges? We'll explore that in more detail once we have the projects pinned down as to dollar amount. We'll work with our financial advisor and really fine-tune what is the maturation of those bonds, what's the best interest rates we can get under different scenarios.
Yeah. We heard yesterday that the 5-6 school may well be the most expensive school ever built in the state of Utah for a school like that. How come?
Well, hang on. That was a criticism that was voiced by somebody if the price tag was north of $30 million. So we actually gave the design team a charter, and that design team is going to be very similar to what we did with the high school. It's going to include all kinds of community members, teachers, members of the administration, parents, folks that were against the old bond and for the old bond, and we have said we would like to keep the price tag under 25.
So before we even start talking about putting that bond on the ballot, I mean, how much more detail do we need? I mean, do we need to know where the 5-6 school is going? We need to know how much it's going to cost. We need to know what property we're going to buy for the high school?
We've set out, so specifically regarding the 5-6, there was a process that was posted, and this is all available to the public on the school district website, that includes having a timeline to have most of that information out and available prior to the time that we would vote a formal bond resolution, which would be the early August type timeframe. As far as the land goes, we're just going to have to move the process further along. I do want to add regarding the land that last night we designated there's a parcel in Silver Creek that did not appear on the 2015 master plan. So those residents over there, I think, are interested to know that we have designated a site in Silver Creek that's approximately 15 acres as a site for a future elementary school, in addition to a site in front of Bear Hollow that is designated for a future elementary school.
You also heard public input suggesting that a bond couldn't be approved at $100, $120, $140 million. That really, when you look at the previous bond failure in 2015 at half that amount, $56 million, I mean, how do we even get people on board for, again, something twice as much?
Well, the key word here is long-range planning. And I think that we are, we've heard loud and clear also from some community members that the school boards of the past have not planned for, 30, 40 years. And we're at the point where literally the basin will be built out. So if we don't get those plots now, we will never have the space to build a second high school, and those residents that would be zoned into a second high school would have to travel a very long way. And we, again, to keep Park City, and have that community feel in our schools that we believe our parents want, this is a time to plan for it. And unfortunately, catch up does come at a price, and that's a fairly big price tag.
Yeah, so I would also add that we're not really comparing apples to apples. That $56 million proposition included money coming from the fund balance of the capital fund. So when you looked at the projects themselves, they were north of $75 million. So if we're going to make a comparison, it's at least 75 to something that's 95. So that's more of the comparison. The board hasn't come to the point of deciding how much of those projects will be funded from the fund balance and how much would actually show up on a bond proposition. Once that conversation happens, then I think you can start doing those comparisons against the prior bond.
So how will that be communicated and basically sold to the public? You heard from Molly Miller saying that we've got some kind of communication strategy for the bond, which would involve hiring a bond communications person?
I believe the role of the board is to give information to the public. So each of the three components, well, I should say that the two schools that are being built for today's needs are truly community-driven process. So it's, you know, would the community like to fund the community's high school and the community's 5-6 school through a bonding process? That's really the question. And then, does the community support the district's efforts to do land long-range planning by acquiring some of the last parcels available of land that are adjacent to our district or in our district?
Yeah. During public input, you heard from Jim Tedford. He was a vocal critic of the bond election in 2015, and he said he wasn't happy with the board threatening the public with a tax levy if the bond fails once again. How do you respond to him?
And I just go back to that this was a community-designed high school. This was a community-designed 5-6 school. We need to build them. We are out of space. If we do not build them, the consequence is larger class size or portables in every school. And I don't think the community wants that. You know, we've done a very bottoms-up process for design, and I believe that process was supported by the community. So either way, it makes sense to build it.
Again, have you heard other people with that same concern express that same concern?
We've heard every kind of concern you can imagine all over the map, and we really do listen, and every board member takes very seriously the input from the community, and we appreciate it. And I will definitely say, as we roll into this 5-6 process, we would really encourage the community to be as vocal about what that school is going to look like as they have been about the high school, because it really did help us come up with what we think is a great school design in 3A.
And again, Todd, you have kind of laid out the differences between what it would cost to go bond and what it would cost a taxpayer to pay for it through the tax levy, the capital tax levy. That's still on the school district website?
It is, and we've asked G.K. Baum, our financial advisor, to refine that even further. So they've looked at that 20-year timeline of a bond, and we have a schedule out there that you can look at. Again, it's on the board docs if you want to take a look at it. And it does. It shows that 20-year impact, the highest payment would be about $230 in 1 year. And then it tapers off over time, because we assume assessed valuations will grow over time and there will be more taxpayers in the tax base paying. So it takes the individual burden off as you spread it around. So that's out there. And then also on the tax levy scenario, the scenario we have out there is a 2-year scenario. And there's a significant difference for those 2 years compared to making an installment payment over 20.
And the board is unanimous, Phil, though, in moving forward with, I mean, one way or the other, we're going to get some schools built.
Yeah, so we had a unanimous vote on the resolution regarding the components of the bond. We had a unanimous vote regarding going to bond in 2017. So, yes, there is support for that.
And again, if it fails, that we will move forward with the capital levy.
That was part of the original bond resolution for 2017. It was basically we will bond, and if the bond fails, we're going to need to move forward strategically to get those schools that the community designed in place.
Okay, let's move on to the late start times. The transportation consultant gave some options. We're talking about a 2-bell schedule and a 3-bell schedule. Basically, the 3-bell schedule is what we have now, but it's just who goes when?
Yeah, I mean, basically, the research and the reason that the board last year passed a policy regarding start times is that the data points to if high school age and these adolescent age students are able to come to school at least an hour later, there's a significant benefit in terms of academic performance, safety, and mental health. So that's the driver for this. So this is already policy that we're going to do it. The hard part, because of transportation and logistics and other factors, has just been figuring out exactly when, and we want to make it reasonable for all of the students, including our elementary students. So the discussion last night got to there seems to be a leaning towards getting it in place regardless of when realignment takes place, which would be in not this coming school year, but the following one in 18-19. And specifically, there's a budget neutral three bell option, and there's several of those, and there is a more expensive two bell option. And we have to we're going to have more information at an upcoming board meeting to try to make that decision of which way to go.
All right. Basically, we're talking about that we need to buy new buses, 4 this year, 5 next year. You'd need 9 over 2 years. That's about $1 million is what, I guess, $900,000 or something to get to that two bell schedule. So that's a pretty significant investment.
Yeah. So, and that
investment,
as a consultant was talking about that, that's our current rotation of equipment or buses. The recommendation to go to two bells is actually an additional 8 buses. So if you wanted to do all of the math, you know, get ourselves up to date with all of our buses where we should be, that's the 9 talked about, and then add another 8 for the two-bell system. We're talking 17 buses in total. So it's pretty steep trying to grab that one all together. But when you just look at the two-bell by itself, it would be an additional 8 buses.
How early are we talking about if we do change?
So in working with the consultant, we had some parameters. One was that no school would start or no elementary school would start before 7:50 in the morning, and that the high school could not start any sooner than 8:30 in the morning, and that the high school would have to let out at 3:20 in the afternoon. So we had some constraints on the consultant in the options that he put forward.
What we haven't seen, though, is, well, I guess you did see some of that, is that the in addition to the expense, the traffic impacts on getting high school students to school on time if they did start later, is that there's no assurance that they would get to school on time. The consultant identified some significant delays at major intersections, both before but especially after school. So given that, does it now, I mean, when you start hearing that, does it now make sense then to think about maybe a new high school makes sense after all, as opposed to expanding the current one?
Well, that's one option. Another is we've been in conversations with the city trying to look at the 248 solutions, what's out there. And there's ideas on what can we do with creating maybe a bus lane or a commuter lane. If we can streamline the way the traffic flows on the street in concert with the city's expectations, we can alleviate some of that. I don't know that there's any scenario that by itself will make traffic better. But at this point, I think we're at the point of how do we mitigate it so that we don't make it any worse.
Okay. Again, Phil, you said that the board continued the decision till you have what, more information? When do you think that'll be made?
Well, I'll work with the administration to make sure that we have the right timing. But you know, maybe in the regular session in April, we would be able to look at that if the administration is ready with that next set of information.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to add?
No, I just want to thank everybody that's participated in our process so far, and keep it coming. Keep the information and thoughts coming.
All right. Phil Kaplan, Todd Halber, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPC. It's a year for the Wasatch County School District. After a school bond was passed in October of 2015, the construction of 2 new schools and a community pool kicked into gear. That meant new school boundaries needed to be drawn. And to top off all of this activity, a new superintendent was named just last June to oversee all of the action. Superintendent Paul Sweat joins me now on the phone this morning. Thank you for joining us, Paul.
Thank you, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's start with the construction update. You have a new elementary school. We're calling that what, Daniels Canyon?
Daniels Canyon Elementary, yes.
And a new middle school, Timpanogos, that's being built right by Old Mill Elementary. Are both schools going to be ready for school this fall?
They are. We're very optimistic at this point that they are on schedule, and barring any unforeseen problems that might crop up, we anticipate them being ready to go for the fall.
All right. On the website, you show that the 2 schools under construction are under budget, but the pool that was budgeted at $10.5 million is now over budget by $3 million. So where are you coming up with that additional money?
Well, the you know, I'd have to double check some of those numbers. We did do some change orders to the pool to make it a little more in line with the original vision, and there were some costs that popped up throughout that process with the pool, but the overall net budget for the three projects, we still are about $4 million under budget in total.
Yeah, the Wasatch Taxpayers Association, they did some research and reviewed the prices for other similar-sized school and other school districts. And, I mean, what they argue is that that we overpriced are the two schools in the first place, done, and that was done on purpose, basically knowing that you couldn't build the pool facility, and so basically transferred then what you call now savings over to the pool. Is that what's going on here?
No, that's certainly not true. We are doing our best to build all three of these facilities, and they're being built in line with what we presented to the taxpayers, and a little bit of overage and underage from one project to another is certainly not uncommon, and our net total is very favorable. The favorable pricing that we received was because of a strong plan that we made to go to bid when we did. We did a hard bid process, so that once those numbers came in, they were final numbers that could not be moved. And we bid very early in the spring. We pushed our architect and engineers to make sure that this was ready to go when the bidding climate is most favorable. Schools that bid 3 and 4 months later were much higher on a per square foot basis, and so we're very pleased with how the process turned out, and we certainly did save the taxpayers a substantial amount of money.
All right. Tell me about this timing device for the pool. I've had a couple of people tell me that it's apparently the most state-of-the-art system, and someone asking if you're planning to have the Olympics there.
You know, the timing device is in line with what other new pools are using. It's not anything exorbitant. It's something that would fit in line with other new pools that are being constructed, and it's something that'll work well and is up to date, and we think it'll function very well as we host many meets and competitions at our pool.
All right, so when it's all built out, you'll have 5 elementary schools, K to 5. You're going to have 2 middle or intermediate schools, 6th, 7th, and 8th, and then the high school, 9 to 12. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then under the new plan, the Timpanogos Intermediate School will be closed as you move into the new middle school. So what do you use that building for then?
That building will now house high school programs. We'll also move our tech department into part of that building. We have several things that we will use the school for currently. Our high school is bursting at the seams. We've experienced 5% growth this past year or two, and anticipated in the future. We've had strong growth since the high school opened, and we're very much in need of some space, and it's within walking distance. The old Timpanogos Intermediate building is within walking distance of Wasatch High, and we will now move a few classes and a few more senior-oriented programs into that building.
And that, you think, will get you through the growth that you need before you need to build, second high school?
It will certainly buy us some time, yes. We will have to make a decision as a community sometime in the near future as to whether or not we want to build onto that high school, or whether we begin the conversation of having 2 high schools, which we know will be a monumental decision for Wasatch County.
Oh, sure.
To make that big step. So,
what is the population at the high? I mean, how many students can fit in that high school?
Well, we have over 2,000 students in the high school right now. there's certainly no extra space anywhere. We're using all of the space and using it as wisely and strategically as we possibly can. The day that high school opened, which has only been, what, 7-8 years ago, we had 1,350 students with the same four grades. So that gives you an idea of the growth that's taking place here in Wasatch County, which subsequently, you know, the school district doesn't have a lot of control over that. That's controlled through the county and the city's planning ordinances and the master plans that they put out through their planning departments, and it's our job to keep up.
Yeah.
It's one of our biggest challenges for sure.
Yeah. So any idea when you might have to bond again?
I wouldn't say today. I wouldn't dare take a stab at that, but we certainly know that it's imminent. It's something we will have to deal with in the not so distant future, for sure.
Yeah, and here in Park City, I mean, we see a lot of that development going up, just, you know, 5 minutes away from the Park City School District boundaries. As we see that development closer to Park City than Heber or Midway, when are you going to start talking about building schools on the north side of Wasatch County?
Well, we will. We just went through a boundary process. We worked closely with our city and county planners. We had them involved in those meetings. We'll continue to try and do the best job we can as far as projections and where things will take place, and as far as the most growth and the most growth that will include the largest number of children, and hopefully that our plan is to be very scientific in where those schools are placed.
Yeah. Transportation, I think, certainly one of the considerations. And again, Wasatch County School District is a big area. I mean, in terms of students spending a lot of time on the school bus, what's the longest bus ride that we're talking about at this point?
Well, we have some long bus rides. That's not a secret. And we do the best we can with those bus rides. We try and be strategic in that. We were very mindful of bus rides as we went through this latest boundary process, and we'll continue to try and minimize those as much as possible. But yes, we do have some bus rides that are more lengthy, and we've done a lot of things to try and help with that. We are, as you probably know, we're a one-to-one district. A lot of our children have a computer or some sort of a device with them. We've introduced internet service on our many of our buses, and including the ones with the longest rides, so that kids can continue to work on their homework, be in contact with their Canvas page, and be productive during those bus rides.
Okay, let's see, the middle school boundaries, I guess, were particularly tough to have to redo, and the debate from that is what you see now. J.R. Smith Elementary, those students now are going to be divided between two middle schools. How come you had to do that?
Well, we have five elementaries, so as we looked at possibly putting three elementary schools in one middle school and only two in the other middle school, it was just too much of a disparity. We had our numbers, the gap in the numbers was too wide, something we were not comfortable with, something that would have certainly been hurtful to our offerings and programs. One of the schools would have been over 900, the other school would have been closer to 600, and so we felt it necessary to create a boundary that balanced that out, which obviously meant that one of the elementaries would have to send students in both directions, but that was very carefully considered. We looked at different elementary schools. We looked at impacts on the various programs that we offer at the middle level, and we came up with what we thought was the very most palatable divide that we could.
Yeah, and then as we mentioned, that the two schools will be ready for the coming school year. What about the pool? Will that be done as well?
It will. It will. Great. We should be in the pool by the 1st of July.
Oh, excellent. Okay, Paul. Hey, I need to leave it there. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's the superintendent of the Wasatch County School District, Paul Sweat. It's 8:49. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City and Wasatch Back Citizens Climate Group will be hosting a climate advocate training session. That's happening this Saturday from 1:30 to 4:30 at Park City Community Church. In the studio with details, I have volunteer Judd Warner. Good morning, Judd.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what is a climate advocate training session?
Look, the climate advocate training session is 3 hours worth of training. It's primarily intended for new citizens, climate lobby volunteers, or persons interested in our organization. But there's content in the training that's useful and applicable to anyone who's interested in engaging the political process and applying influence in conversations with their elected officials.
Do people need to register, or do they just show up?
They can generally just show up. I would appreciate an RSVP if you're planning on coming, RSV to Park City at citizensclimatelobby.org.
Okay.
My email.
Is this the same thing that Park City leaders went through a couple of weeks ago that former Vice President Al Gore teaches?
No. Different organizations. They went through the Climate Reality Project's climate leaders training, which is a more extensive, a 2 or 3 day program. This is just a 3 hour session intended to introduce people to Citizens Climate Lobby, our missions, our objectives, our methodologies, and how we conduct our interactions with our elected officials.
All right. The session is free.
It is free.
Okay. People need to bring maybe a lunch or something, or snack?
If needs be. There won't be any food provided.
Okay.
And the session will be from 1:30 to 4:30 in the afternoon. So bring a snack if you'd like one. Okay. There will be breaks.
All right. I noticed that. And then pretty specific outline, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here. These 20-minute segments. Yeah. Are you teaching all of these, or?
No, I'm not teaching those. The course will be taught by two long-term citizens climate volunteers, and they are Bill Barron and David Folland from Salt Lake. So David Folland oversees the activities of all of the 5 Citizens Climate Lobby chapters in Utah. He's a retired pediatrician. He's been active in Citizens Climate Lobby for 6 years, and he's been engaged in lobbying efforts both on the local stage and in Washington, D.C. for that period of time. The other instructor will be Bill Barron, and you may remember Bill. Bill's been here in the studio. Collected about 30,000 votes in his run for the Senate seat of Mike Lee last election cycle, running on the climate ticket. Bill leads what we call the Wild West region for Citizens Climate Lobby, and Bill's quite experienced in lobbying on Citizen Climate Lobby's behalf at all levels.
All right, so there's like 9 different 20-minute sessions. I mean, what's somebody going to get out of this?
What I think somebody's going to get out of it is, some exposure to our organization. If you attend the training, you'll learn about Citizens Climate Lobby, our history, our mission, what we're trying to accomplish. You'll learn about our carbon fee and dividend legislative proposal, and that information all specific to us. But generally speaking, you'll learn about the respectful methodology that we use in engaging our elected officials with the intention of establishing a long-term relationship that yields results over time and is proven to do so. And that's a useful skill set. And there will be some training in that methodology, and some practical exercises we'll practice on each other.
Yeah, that's interesting. I see lots of breaks for our exercise, you know, writing letters to the editor, practicing laser talk.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some of the things that will happen here? I mean, just specifically?
Sure, I'll talk about. Well, for example, there's one module that talks about starting off the conversation positively. And one element that's part of our methodology is, regardless of who we're meeting with, we try to start off the conversation with some acknowledgement of something positive that particular legislative official has done. That's a good way to get started. So, well, there's a module that talks about that. Okay, there's our laser talks are just the very short 2 or 3 sentence summaries of the major points of Citizens Climate Lobby's legislative proposal or our communication approach. And so we'll practice some of those. Okay.
Okay. And then the Citizens Climate Lobby, I mean, what is it that you're what's your mission?
So our mission in one sentence is to influence the passage of carbon fee legislation. And we have a specific carbon fee proposal or carbon tax, it's more commonly referred to, that we call carbon fee and dividend. And what carbon fee and dividend would do would it impose a gradually increasing fee on carbon-based fuels based on the amount of greenhouse gases or CO2 that they emit when burned. And that fee would start at $15 a ton of CO2 equivalent emitted to the atmosphere, increased by $10 a ton every year. And then that fee is then collected into some form of trust fund at the national level, and then returned to taxpayers via monthly or quarterly rebates. So,
given the current administration, though, and the fact that some saying climate change is a hoax, we have an administration filled with folks that are part of the gas and natural gas industries. Do you ever? I mean, is this even feasible at this point?
It is feasible. It is feasible, and there's no doubt about it, Leslie. The current political climate in Washington D.C. is an impediment and a setback. But there's too much momentum. Yeah, we'll get through this. And in fact, just in the past year, there's been an organization set up in the United States Congress called the Climate Solutions Caucus. It was initiated in February 2016 with one Democratic congressman and one Republican congressman, a guy by the name of Carlos Curbelo from Florida. It's now grown to 28 members, 14 Republicans, 14 Democrats, and their mission statement is to explore economically viable policy options for mitigating climate change. And here, I think you may be aware that Mia Love is one of the representatives on that committee. She joined in November of last year. And in addition to that, some of the listeners may have been aware of this Climate Leadership Council's proposal for a carbon tax that is very similar to what Citizens Climate Lobby is proposing. And that's been all over the press for the last couple of months. They've had meetings with the president's staff, and that group of Climate Leadership Council consists of three former secretaries, and they're all Republicans, three former secretaries of the Treasury.
Given that we're seeing kind of a move to giving more power and authority back to the states, does this carbon tax that you talk about, does this have to be a national tax, or can it be done on a state-by-state basis?
It can be done on a state-by-state basis. It's a little bit more complicated because then you have to determine how to regulate the carbon-emitting commerce at the borders, right? But it can be done. There's a legislative proposal in the state of Washington to apply a carbon tax on a state level. There's one in Massachusetts, and in fact, there was one introduced by Representative Joel Briscoe in our last legislative session here in Utah that is very similar to Citizen Climate Lobby's carbon fee and dividend proposal. Representative Briscoe introduced it very late in the session, and it never made it out of the Rules Committee. But it is a numbered bill, and we'll see it next year.
Okay. So, again, this training's happening this Saturday, March 25th, 1:30 to 4:30 at the Park City Community Church there in the Assembly Hall. Again, give us the email that people can RSVP to.
That email is parkcity@citizensclimatelobby.org.
Okay. Hey, Jud, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.